welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the April 21st, 2019 session, focusing on John chapter 20, verses 1 through 18, Believing the Improbable. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
So I'm curious if you have any practices that you follow through Lent that lead you to Easter that you find particularly meaningful.
Well, in my family, we traditionally do the fast from something. Mm-hmm. And so I always follow that, and also then adding a practice. So this year I was fasting from alcohol, and then my practice was to read a psalm every day. And so I'm doing that. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, has gotten into this, and she is abstaining from, as much as possible, added sugar in her diet. And so in her own Lenten practice, Sunday is a feast day. Mm-hmm. And so Sunday she makes up for what she gives up during the week. So anyway, but that's what we're doing.
Nice. Every year my Lenten practices are different. I've done lots of different things through the years. Usually I abstain from something, find something to add. But there are two things that have been pretty consistent for me for the last few years. And so during Lent, I listen to John Rutter's Requiem.
Oh.
I usually start my Lent with listening to it all the way through, and then throughout the season, I'll just play parts of it, my favorite parts. And I don't wear a lot of religious jewelry, but during Lent, I'm wearing it right now. I have a little tiny gold cross, and I tend to keep it around my neck during Lent. And I can't even tell you why. It's just become one of those things that is reminding for me of the season that I'm in. So if I've chosen to fast from something or to take on a practice, the necklace is a marker and a reminder. So
have you sung in the Requiem?
So my senior year of college, yeah. I was in a university choir, and that's when I was introduced to Rutter's Requiem. Yeah. And it is, for me, it is one of the most beautiful compositions I've ever heard in my life. Yeah, and I've never been a part of such a large choir. It was just such a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. And so it brings back those memories for sure, but also having a deeper understanding of what's behind the words. It's become a Lenten practice for me. I'll probably end up turning it on later tonight now that I've talked about it.
No.
Okay.
I'm just not that disciplined. I have great respect for it. And in different years, I've done different things. This year, I've just been so overwhelmed with school and everything. If I have a Lenten practice, it's been that over the last month, I've gotten hooked on the TV show Blackish. But other than that, no. Which I highly recommend for a Lenten season.
And
After that, if you've not seen Blackish.
You often do process through media of some form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Storytelling. I speak for myself. I tend to fast on something. This year I gave up dessert, which has been very painful because I have a sweet tooth. But also trying to practice generosity, to try to find new places to practice generosity. Mm-hmm. And so that's been part of it, at least for this year. I'm like you, Nikki, it's not always the same, but. Well, I hope, however you have observed the season, that you have a marvelous Lent. I mean, excuse me, a marvelous Easter. And enjoy the rejoicing and celebration that this day is. So with that, we're looking at the text for Easter Sunday. And Daniel, I wonder if you could help us get started.
Yeah, thanks, David. I'll be glad to. The Easter story. What can I say new or unique about the Easter story? As much as I love the story, as central as this story is to our faith, I'm not sure what else I can do with it. So let me just tell a story. I read this book some time ago, and I absolutely love it. It's a book published by National Public Radio a few years ago entitled, I Thought My Father Was God. It's a collection of true stories told through their National Story Project. And this book contains stories from 180 men and women, young and old, from all walks of life. And one of the stories in the book is told by a woman named Randy Rosenfeld. Randy tells of the time her mother woke her in the middle of the night and told her to call 911 immediately. The ambulance arrived and took her father to the hospital. When Randy and her mother arrived, their dad was already in surgery where he'd be for the next 12 hours. The doctors explained that an aneurysm had erupted in his brain and he would likely never wake up from the coma. Sometime later, Randy was keeping vigil in her dad's hospital room, and all of a sudden her father opened his eyes. The doctors rushed in and asked him all sorts of questions to see if he was conscious and alert. How old are you? What year is it? Who is the president? Where are you? He answered all of them correctly except that last one, where are you? When they asked him that, this lifelong New Jersey resident answered, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So sometime later after that, Randy's father had a relapse and died. A few weeks after the funeral, Randy received a letter from the Gift of Life Organ Donation Program. Her father's heart had gone to save the life of a 53-year-old man with three children in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hmm. Now, y'all know me by now. I'm a skeptic. But I just don't know what to do with that story. And frankly, I don't know what to do with this Easter story either. They're both resurrection tales of sorts. And this Easter story we're reading from the Bible just amazes me. It's early Sunday morning. The text says that Mary goes to the tomb, quote, while it was still dark. Maybe John was speaking about the time of day, but I also think he was speaking about the state of Mary's heart. While it was still dark. Maybe she's afraid or in shock over seeing Jesus die. Maybe she's grief-stricken with the realization that he's gone, that she'll never see him again. So Mary arrives at the tomb while it is still dark to pay her respects and to grieve. So, and this is important, friends, contrary to what Hallmark says, Easter begins not with chocolate bunnies or lilies or seersucker suits or smocked dresses. Easter begins at the cemetery. At this point, the story takes a dramatic turn. Mary arrives to see that the large stone covering the tomb's opening has been rolled away and Jesus' body is gone. Wait a minute, this can't be right. Do I have the right grave? She looks inside the tomb and sees two angels dressed in dazzling white, and she hears someone call out her name, Mary. And she knows. She knows that voice. She turns around to hug his neck. It is Jesus. He was dead and is alive again. Just when she thought all hope was lost, Jesus appears and calls her name. And off she goes to preach the very first Easter sermon. Jesus is alive. We've been told all our lives that this is incredible news, right? Because if Christ is dead, then his story's over. But if Christ is alive, then his story continues, and that's where our hope comes from. And I think we don't fully fill out all of this story, what it can mean in our own lives. Yes, Christ is alive. That's wonderful news, and that is a miracle. But the great miracle of Easter also includes your resurrection too. Mine too. Because Christ is alive, so are we. I suspect that in some of our churches this morning, we will sing that great Easter hymn, Christ the Lord is Risen Today. And there's a line in that hymn that gets me choked up every time. Made like him, we rise. We rise not simply from the grave, not simply on the days of our own deaths, but because Christ is risen, we can rise right now, today. so many times we think we are stuck with the way things are right now. My relationship with my mother will never change. This church is just stuck. I can't beat my addiction. I'll never meet someone. But my friends, wherever death has us in its grip, wherever we have given in to despair, wherever we have given up on each other or ourselves or even on God, Christ rolls back the stone and tells us to rise. Christ has risen, and so we rise. So that's why you'll find me in church on Easter Sunday. Yes, I'm the pastor, but even if I weren't, I just have to join my brothers and sisters proclaiming, Christ is risen indeed. Because in the midst of this crazy, messed up world, I need to believe once again that a new day is dawning, that the Spirit of God is alive and well, that the risen Christ still reaches out to broken people like me, that God still has a magnificent vision for my church and for my own life and for this world. And once again, I need to bear witness to it. All because Christ is risen. Hallelujah and amen.
Amen.
Amen. Daniel, you reminded me that one of my favorite ways to break my Lenten practices is by going to an Episcopal Easter service.
Yeah.
The Episcopals are dependable. You're going to get pretty much the same liturgy no matter what Episcopal church you go to on Easter. I love to go every once in a while when I can to the 3-hour Easter liturgy. I even took my daughter 1 year. She made it through, though she ducked under the pew when they started spraying the water to remember your baptism. But what I love so much about that service is it begins before the sun rises. And the first time I experienced it was in a stone church in downtown Atlanta, and all the lights were off. And it begins in the church feeling very much like a tomb. It is dark. It is quiet. It is still. You enter in silence. And for the first hour of the service, you are in dark. And it reminds me that of what you said, that Easter begins in a cemetery. And it begins with uncertainty, and it begins even with fear. And I'm like you, I don't know what to do with the story all the time. But remembering the story and retelling the story always has a way of kind of rejuvenating me in a way. But so you just reminded me that that is one of my favorite ways to break my Lenten practices, to go and to sit in that service. If you've never done it, I encourage you to find a way to do it. It begins in darkness, and then after it takes on a reading through the Old Testament into the New Testament. And then in the third hour, generally there are bells ringing and the lights get flown on, and you experience Easter happening in the midst of the service. It's beautiful if that's kind of your thing. So
that's interesting, Nikki, because I wasn't... You took it someplace that I hadn't thought of, and I think that's really good because... Unfortunately, for too many of us, our church experience goes from Palm Sunday, the parade, to Easter with the trumpets.
Right.
And we don't take that journey through death. Mm-hmm. We don't take that journey to Jerusalem, to the cross.
Right.
And so in a very practical sense, we need to be remembered that this story begins in darkness, and that's not just the time of day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is the darkness in Mary's heart. I mean, she went to that tomb fully expecting to see a dead body there, to make some preparations, to, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's an important reminder to remember where have we come? That's part of the great drama that has set up this whole, you know, this play. Yeah, I think it's incredibly important.
Well, and I think the hallmark of Christian faith is the resurrection. Mm-hmm. But I think that we often forget that resurrection is impossible without death.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen without death. And so, so for us, with what you're talking about today, if we're going to look at how we can have resurrection in our own lives and in our own spaces, what death has to occur in order that new life may come?
That's exactly right. So often we want resuscitation.
Yes.
Right.
Not
yes.
resurrection. And those are two different things.
Absolutely, because resuscitation means we just, hey, maybe we're just asleep. Or
right,
maybe
right.
we're just...
I'm not dead yet.
That's not dead yet. Oh,
I knew you were
start.
Going there. I knew you were going there. Now, I knew either you or Bert was going to go there.
I couldn't help
had
it.
To.
Well, no, here's where I'm going with it. Because before we started recording, we were talking about Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And Daniel, when you said Easter begins in the cemetery, and I'm trying not to be blasphemous, my mind just immediately went to Pet Sematary, because there's a new remake about to come out of the movie, of the book. The book is fantastic, but that idea, when you said resurrection is new life as opposed to just resuscitation, that's the darkness that Stephen King comes up with in Pet Sematary, that sometimes dead is better. We'd rather have resuscitation. We'd rather have something that we had come back to life. And even if it's not fully what it was, it's a little something what it was. It turns out to be worse than it was. But that's a whole other thing. And I don't know where I'm going with Stephen King, except that's what came to my mind. And when you said resurrection is not resuscitation, that's the warning of Pet Sematary. But it's not for the faint of heart, by the way, the book anyway.
Well, I think our churches so often opt for resuscitation over resurrection.
Yes, because it's familiar.
Right. We try to resuscitate old programs. We try to resuscitate old ways of doing things. And we don't look into living into a resurrection of what we do. And that is something new. That is something changed. That is something transformed.
Yes.
It is something complete. It means that the old thing is dead and gone.
And again,
and something new becomes.
To quote Stephen King, sometimes dead is better.
There we
because
go.
Because it
yeah.
gives us
sure.
new life. I'm just saying.
And that's right. And that can be, you said, you know, resurrection in relationships. Sometimes we yes. have to kill the old ways of relating and find new ways of relating with one another.
Mm. Well, I just want to share, this is my resurrection story from last year. Last year, in 2018, Starkville, Mississippi had its first ever Pride Parade. And it happened the week of Palm Sunday. And so that Saturday mm-hmm. was the Pride Parade, then Palm Sunday, and then the week after that was Easter.
Right.
And the week between, that whole week for me, was so overwhelming with what had been leading up to the Pride Parade, the first Pride Parade, which was we're going to have a Pride Parade. No, you can't have a Pride Parade. It was a nightmare. It was darkness. God's going to come strike everybody down. Da 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 da. No, we're going to have a Pride Parade. And the overwhelming sense of life that I witnessed when we had that Pride Parade, it affected my Easter sermon. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to share a few things that I wrote that, and I preached last year, that I believe in the resurrection because I witnessed it in such colorful beauty and splendor in Starkville's first ever Pride Parade. Because several people I have known as a minister, I have heard their coming out stories. And I've known their own personal themes of darkness, of coldness, of fear, of anxiety, of feelings, defeat and despair, depression, self-hatred, and suicidal thoughts and suicidal attempts. And I've known their stories of having their life, their very self, pushed and shoved deep down and hidden in shame to the point of being dead inside. And then I've heard their stories of coming out and opening the door and emerging into a new life, like when Dorothy opens the door of her black and white tornado-ravaged Kansas farmhouse and walks out into the majesty and wonder of all the bright colors in the land of Oz. And that's how I felt at the Pride Parade, and that's why I believe in the resurrection, because I've witnessed death and life in my LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And I'll add this quote from Anne Lamott. Anne Lamott says, that all of my work in the last 28 years has been about becoming a resurrection story, slowly, painstakingly healing from the damages of childhood in a family where parents didn't love each other, the damage this culture does to children who are different, how the love of God through friends slowly helps us be restored to the person we were born to be. The damage this culture does to children who are different, and how the love of God slowly helps us to be restored to the people we were born to be. Lamont says that in the living Christ, we are all becoming resurrection stories.
Bert, I love your story about, I love how you shared about the new life that you witnessed in helping to bring about the Pride Parade in Starkville, Mississippi. And with that, and then thinking about this idea of how we so often opt for resuscitation versus resurrection, it makes me ask the question, what is scary about resurrection? Because I think that there has to be something about it that makes us uncertain or wary or nervous. Or is it that death has to come first? Is that what is the most scary?
I was going to say, that's my knee-jerk reaction, is that if we are simply resuscitated, we can go back to the way we were.
Mm-hmm.
But when there is death, we cannot go back to the way we were.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And I remember, this has been several years ago, I was working in a church, and we had the church consultant come in, you know, to help us write a vision. And they do what church consultants always do. Let's talk about the things that we're doing well. And one saint said, you know, one thing that I think we're just really doing well is that we're ready. And we thought, what, ready for what? She goes, if 1965 ever returns, we're ready. And I thought, yep. She said, okay, so well then what are some ways that we can, you know, live into a better future? But anyway, it was funny because I thought, you know, she was, in a very joking way, she was right that we were hoping to just be resuscitated, and that what we had been could just continue on.
Yes.
But the scary part of resurrection is that it begins with death, just like this story begins at the cemetery. That resurrection can't happen unless we let something die. And I don't want to gloss over that by saying, hey, resurrection's coming, but because that is a scary thing. There are things about myself that I every day don't want to give up and let die, but I don't know another way to resurrection.
So I think that, like, what you're touching on it's that fear of death, fear of something dying, fear of something no longer existing. But what I also heard in what you were saying is, you know, we're ready for 1965 if it ever comes back, by golly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's dependable and known.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like we can look back and go, this is what that looked like. And if it ever comes back, we're going to be there, and we can do that. And we're ready, and we know we can do that. We're capable. But with resurrection, looking forward, it's all unknown. It is not dependable. It is, we have no evidence of what it's going to be, this new thing that comes. And will we be capable of rising to that, whatever that is? I think there's fear in both the loss, mm-hmm. but also in the unpredictability of what comes after.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. I was thinking, yeah, there was a great fear in the death, but there's fear in the resurrection, in that resurrection means I might be surprised by what God brings about.
Right.
You know, on the other side of that I might be surprised.
I might not like what God brings about.
That's right. Yeah,
exactly.
I might not like who God brings, you know. Yeah. What's that? I've heard you either, speaking of the Pride Parade, either had a t-shirt or a sign, Bert, or something that said, you know, be careful who you hate.
Yes. It might be someone you love.
Might be someone one day that you love. Yeah, that we do not know what or who or when, all of those questions. We don't know what God might yet do on the other side of resurrection. And so there is fear in that. there's also joy in that, mm-hmm. in that those things that need to die. And once they die, maybe they're dead for good. And, mm-hmm. and there's, thanks be to God, there's life on that other side.
I'll be honest, this conversation feels really relevant. Working at a seminary, I am incredibly aware of how many churches are closing because they couldn't figure out how to reimagine what it looked like to be church in their context. And I'm really aware of ministers who can't continue their ministry because they can't find ways to reimagine how they do their ministries. And I think that we are in, if you talk to church historians, they tell you that the church remakes itself every 500 years. And we're around one of those times. I think the church mm-hmm. is in the process of remaking itself. The last time was at the Reformation mm-hmm. about 500 years ago. Mm-hmm. We just celebrated 500 years when Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door. And maybe we need another 95 theses nailed to the church door. But I think that right now churches are, I watch them fizzle and die because they cannot figure out how to reimagine what it looks like to share the gospel in the context in which they're living. And what ends up happening is when they hold on to old ways, the church is alienating more people than it is welcoming, and it's causing more harm than it is good. And that's not what the church has to be. I think the church has so much more hope than that. And I think it's an important thing for us to think about what resurrection can look like in our congregations, and how can we let some old things go and live into some new ways of being, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it stretches us beyond where we thought we could go.
Mm-hmm. And part of this, it comes back to the title we gave for this session, mm-hmm. which is Believing the Improbable.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many ways, we are so tempted to live as if God is pretty much done. God's really created the good stuff. The good stuff is already there. We've got it. We just need to preserve it, figure out how to return to it. It's like God is done. Like God is tired. God is out of ideas. God is out of energy. The Spirit's not working anymore. This God who created all that we know is somehow out, done, finished.
Right.
There's no new. But if we don't believe that, if we really believe the improbable, that we are only barely down this path and God has so much more, that God is ready to create, that God is calling us to be part of creating as the church, that's an exciting thing. That means this rebirth, as unknown as it is, and it is unknown, it is a good thing. And embracing the creative side of God, this God who is not at all finished and is full of new ideas, that's exciting. To think we could be part of that newness arising out of the death of things that have done well, but they're done.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I really hope we can all not just enjoy and celebrate this day, but also be encouraged by this God who has beat the worst that the world could throw at us, that beat the worst the world could throw at Christ, that overcame death and is loaded with lots of ideas and energy for the future. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.